From downtown Milwaukee, welcome to Money Talk with Bob Landis. Each week, professional advisors from Landis & Company Investments discuss the latest financial developments, offering timely insight and long-term perspective.
This is Money Talk for August 19th, 2022. It's Irish Fest weekend, but not for the Brewers, who are in Chicago for a series with the Cubs. And the Packers host the New Orleans Saints at Lambeau, and that's tonight. Speaking of the Pack, have I got a deal for you? A diehard Packer fan is selling his green and gold Packer school bus. It has a bar, built-in cooler, and a restroom, and it seats 14. Well, 15 if you count the restroom. And the price is just $14,000. That works out to $1,000 a seat. The catch, of course, is you have to have 13 friends, and they can't be from Chicago. You know, you have to draw the line somewhere. In a bizarre case of mistaken identity, a woman stabbed her husband several times after she found a photo of him with a younger woman. Ironically, it turns out that she herself was the other woman. The photo was taken years ago when they were younger and thinner. For his own safety, he's recovering in an undisclosed location. A small British town wanted to spruce up their downtown with some new landscaping. Unknowingly, they planted a dozen four-foot-tall cannabis plants. No mention was made of who sold them the four-foot-tall marijuana plants or how they disposed of them, but I'm guessing they burned them, one joint at a time. A European travel company is selling vacation packages to Ukraine. The travel packages are called Experience Ukraine Like Never Before. So far, they sold 150 packages. What's the next vacation hotspot, Afghanistan? And finally, we're off to Florida for this goofy headline. Florida man on drugs kills imaginary friend and turns himself in. On the podcast today, we have Art Rothschild, Dave Sandstrom, and wrapping up the week, here's Kyle Tidding.
Well, thanks, Max. As always, tough to follow. Tough week overall for the markets. The NASDAQ down 2.6% this week, closing at the bell at 12,705. The S&P down 1.2%, closing today at 42.28. The Dow Jones Industrial Average just a little bit better, although still down 0.2% for the week, closing at 33.706. Down 293 points today alone. For the year, the NASDAQ down 18.4, the S&P down 10.4%, and the Dow Jones Industrial Average down 6.1. That's a quick look at the numbers for the week. Obviously an end to what had been a nice long stretch of winning weeks for markets. I think a reminder, maybe as we jump off here, Art, that you know sometimes the risk in markets is something we need to remember, that in a week like this, the Dow, the S&P hold up a little better than the NASDAQ, perhaps. There's all kinds of reasons why, certainly. But a reminder for investors that amid all this, there's things we need to be cautious about.
Yeah, the term reminder is a good one. And the fact that we just had that reminder, again, 4 weeks in a row making money, six pretty good weeks. I mean, we've come back a long ways from the bottom. Last week, the talk was, gee, the NASDAQ is off the mat and into bear market territory. Really? Or is it just some kind of a trap? And the reason, the market abhors uncertainty, but I think the market's creating more uncertainty than is deserved, as we'll be talking more about, I'm sure. The talk all week was about the change, you know, the Fed policy. The minutes are released, and they're telling us they're going to be cautious in what they do. A few Fed governors are talking about how don't second-guess the Fed. We know that they want to get inflation under control. The markets just don't know how, but they took the comments as being a bit hawkish. And I don't think they were intended to be hawkish. I think they were intended to be simply candid. So if we get a sell-off in a week like this for that reason, I'm encouraged because I don't think it was any reason to have a sell-off of the magnitude we had today.
I think also, Art, that's kind of shaping up to be kind of a classic bear market bounce that we've seen over the last 6 weeks where, you know, you get in a situation where markets maybe just got a little too bearish. And you know, we've been in a year where we've really been void of any good news whatsoever. And, you know, we do finally get our, that inflation report that dips the other way. And I think investors, you know, maybe got ahead of themselves a little bit on the hopes that maybe the Fed's going to pause sooner than later. So a little stark reminder this week not to jump the gun on to your point, in fighting the Fed.
And, of course, a reminder that all of this takes time, right, that the inflation rate doesn't just go back to 2% overnight. You know, maybe by the end of this year, we're talking about a more reasonable rate, but still above Fed target likely. And so, you know, this expectation that, you know, suddenly tomorrow all the data is going to point to an economy that's back to where it's supposed to be, that's humming along, and that inflation isn't a problem, I think maybe a little more, maybe a little more rosy of an outlook than what most people should be expecting right now. It doesn't mean the market needs to fall apart. It just means that I think we need to be a little more sensitive to the fact that the data is not all going to be perfect all at once. And of course, as you look at some of the economic data this week, there's still some positive signs out there. Industrial production up, you know, somewhat significantly, up 0.6% in July. You know, I think as you look at a sector that was once a very critical piece of our economy, now, you know, much more service sector based, but, you know, certainly an important piece overall, industrial production, a big piece of what's going to lead us through the next half of this economic recovery potentially. And then you look at, you know, retail sales still being, I think, somewhat strong, signs that the consumer is doing all right. And we saw that this week with earnings reports from Walmart, Home Depot. You know, Walmart's the largest retailer here in the U.S. for U.S. consumers. You know, I think it's a critical piece of what's going right. So some positive signs overall there. And then I think as we look at kind of this idea of profitability here in the U.S., looking specifically, you know, at kind of the potential for a recession, but also an earnings recession, Dave, I think, you know, some things to be aware of as we look ahead through the end of this year.
Yeah, you're right on the nose, Kyle. And I think that, you know, to your earlier point, we're at our unemployment rate at 3.5%. The consumer is pretty healthy. You know, Americans have always proven that they like to spend money. We're great at consumption. We're the best consuming economy in the world. And when you have full employment and people are feeling comfortable about their jobs, they have the propensity to spend. So that's going to feed right into corporate earnings and continued success, especially at the retail level, like you pointed out with some of those encouraging numbers from Walmart and Home Depot early this week. So a healthy consumer, full employment, those are a couple of the bright spots right now.
And of course, Art, we're looking at some significant slowdown issues in China. We've been talking about it. It feels like for years, right, that the Chinese economy, first and foremost, not as strong as maybe the Chinese government would have you believe. But beyond that, now seeing some real signs of slowing, the housing market or the, you know, housing kind of sector in China, a pretty significant component of growth. And they've seen meaningful challenges. You know, how does the global economy digest some of the problems out of China?
That is problematical. I mean, when you look at the past few decades, the world global growth has been propelled by Chinese growth. But even though growth is slowing in China, it's still supposed to be, I think, around 4% is the forecast, which is going to be higher than anything we're going to have. But the rate of growth is indeed slowing going forward. We have to watch that situation. And we have to watch the situation in Europe as well. England is a classic example. I think they just came up with inflation figures that are records or something. They're 10%, and they're raising rates despite that, which is cautionary because that's what's going to happen here. We're going to keep raising rates, and consumers will keep spending, but perhaps they won't be spending as much. And I think this is the caution. If we're investing, we should be investing for the long term. As we look backwards, we know that even though this has been a very difficult year, over the past 3 years, investors have done well with balanced portfolios, 5 years, 10 years, 20 years. So what we do works on a long-term basis, and the good news is that what we're talking about today, what's going to happen tomorrow, we don't have to know, because we do know over long periods of time that the strategies we employ are going to continue to work.
You know, Dave, overall, it's been a rough year for bonds. I think that's been the bigger problem this year. Stocks have bad years. We know that's true. It's been rare for bonds to see the kind of sell-off we've seen this year. As a result, we're starting to see some articles. You forwarded me one from Forbes earlier in the week about different approaches to fixed income. You know, certainly we're taking new approaches to fixed income or approaches we haven't looked at for a while. We mentioned last week the role that maybe some certificates of deposit or even treasury bonds might play. But, you know, I think some writers, some journalists now leaning a little too heavy potentially into this idea that well, if you know your bond fund is down a little bit, just buy an individual bond because at least you'll know what you'll get. Maybe some risks to going too heavy into just buying individual issues, though.
Yeah, correct, Kyle, especially if you're going to compare that, as this writer did, to participating in the bond market via ETFs and index funds where you don't have a maybe a seasoned manager that's monitoring and managing the actual individual bonds within that portfolio. I think in the case that we were talking about, we did have a couple of clients that were, I think, a little misinformed as to what it means to hold individual bonds, and people that thought that that individual bonds don't react price-wise the same way with interest rates, and they, of course, do. Obviously, you control when you sell it, so holding it to maturity, there are some advantages there. But a good bond manager and a lot of the strategies that we employ, you will see those bond managers doing the same thing, holding those bonds till maturity to protect that principal. So I think that some of the other hurdles there, of course, are the size of some of those issues or buying individual bonds, because to really take the risk out of a situation like that, you have to probably employ a laddered strategy, and that might require a significant amount of money to be invested there that not every investor has access to.
Yeah, I think we need to be clear that there's all kinds of reasons why you might want to buy an individual bond or two. I think the reality, though, is that the bond market's as diverse as the stock market is, if not more so. And so you get back to all these questions of, well, if I'm going to buy a bond, and again, a bond, not bonds, which bond do I buy? If I'm going to buy a bond, how do I know that that company that issued that bond or that country or whatever it is still going to be around? And so I think there are some significant challenges when you give up this idea of diversification for the certainty of a single bond. There's places where it makes all the sense in the world. You buy an individual treasury, you buy a CD, a certificate of deposit, you know what you're going to get. You can match liabilities, right? I got a certain payment that I have to make in a year, and so I want to make sure that I get that money back at this particular time.
But the frustrating thing now for investors is that interest rates have been going higher. So no matter who's managing the fund, no matter how good the manager, no matter how great their track record the past 3, 5, and 10 years, they haven't done well this year. And it's because interest rates are rising. What complicates it further is that we don't know where the Fed's going to end up, where interest rates not only are going to go temporarily, but where they're going to plateau. So although we like bond funds, as you and I have talked about frequently, we like cash, for very short-term needs as well.
Yeah, I think it makes all the sense in the world right now. You can get 2% plus on a money market in some cases. You can get all kinds of better rates than what we ever saw in the past. And so I think as we look at what the opportunity set is right now, I think the reality is we are in an environment in which all of a sudden I'm far more interested in holding safe money than I ever was before. And so, I think that point is well received. I think as we kind of look to the future, it's going to be different things than it was in the past. It necessarily is. But also as we kind of come through a period in time in which the market's rallied a little bit, but also, that we've taken a little bit of a step back this week, I think just a reminder that, diversification is key, that preservation plays a role in that, and there's lots of different ways you can do that. Well, thanks for listening. We enjoy doing the program for you. We'll talk to you again next week.
Thank you for listening to Money Talk with Bob Landis. If you have a financial question you want answered on next week's show, email it to moneytalk@landis.com. To keep informed throughout the week, visit our Money Talk page at landis.com.